Welcome back to the Nerd Code Podcast. Today's episode is going to be another AFK update. If you're new to the show, well, these updates, I use these bonus episodes to talk about my personal life and how this affects the podcast, you know. In the last three episodes, I've been very distant. I haven't been able to talk about my personal issues, but I read a Twitter post the other day talking about how men use podcasts to instead of going to therapy, you know. And I find it pretty funny and ironic at the time, because my wife died from colon cancer this past Monday. It was Monday, 28th, February 28th, 2022. And around 8:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, she died in the hospital. I wasn't with her at the time. I was working the entire day, and around 2 p.m., I got a notification from the hospital telling me about it. So I was taking over. I was working at the time, but during the nights and the mornings, I was taking care of her, basically staying there in the hospital. And my mother-in-law was in charge of taking care of her during the day. And sadly, she passed away after battling against this disease that we didn't know she had. Everything began on December 12, 2022, when she suddenly, during the early morning of that day, she began barfing and puking food, and she got strong pains on the stomach. So we went to the doctor, and that's where everything began. So I wasn't prepared for this, but I did have savings, thankfully. But I wasn't prepared for this at all, in the sense that we were switching from doctor to doctor. We were, at the beginning, we were looking for my wife. We were not living together at the time. She came to visit me. So we were, let's say that we were... I was living with my parents, and she was living with her parents. So we were not together at the time. So that was the situation. And however, this make us come together again. And my concern at the time was her health. So that's why I was focusing on her the entire time. During this time, the end of the year was coming by, so I didn't go to the holidays, the December 24 or the end of the year. Those passed by, including our own there are other celebrations, but anyway, the thing is, we were dealing with this disease. We didn't know what it was up until February, but at the time, during January 2022, I was notified from work that I was going to be rolled off from the project that I was working on due to my low performance, not from this, but from months ago. So it was my fault, actually. and I was not able to pick up the slack, so to speak. So I actually deserve that one. But the early roll off could not come in the worst moment for me and my wife. Because although I do have some savings at the time, because I was saving to buy a house, so we could both live together away from our parents and basically start a proper marriage couple life, you know. However, that didn't happen. So in mid-January, we are caught up with the news that this is not going away. My wife is unable to go to the restroom to do the deed, you know, and we were getting worried. So we were looking for a specialist, and my father found a friend of his dedicated to the stomach area of medicine, you know, the gastrointestinal medicine. So we went to see him, and after 15 days of struggling to find out what she had, he basically was clueless at the time, but he gave us an explanation about the Helicobacter pylori bacteria that may be causing all of the issues here. And however, traces of the bacteria were found on feces. On an analysis, but after using a camera through her mouth, they didn't really find too much damage in the stomach. So my wife was still barfing and trying to puke, but she didn't get anything on the stomach. So we didn't know what was going on. She tried to eat, and she puked the food again. And she was not able to go to the restaurant anymore. So we got desperate, and we went to another hospital. And the doctor there recommended us to take an x-ray from her abdomen. And that's where we first encountered a series of shadows that basically described that the feces were still there. They were not moving, and she was filled with gases and human feces on her intestines. So after that, I tried to keep calm. We contacted the doctor again, and we changed the strategy, so to speak. And now we focus on the intestines, and the further analysis didn't show anything special. So with tomographies and ultrasound analysis, we didn't find anything that was actually occlusing or closing the intestine canal. So the doctor proposed that we basically, through surgery, we open up my wife, basically, so, and look for what could it be that could be blocking the intestine. So centimeter by centimeter, from the mouth of the stomach up until the rectum, he was going to basically touch and look for whatever is blocking the way, so to speak. So February 1st, she was scheduled for this surgery, and at least at the time, the doctor told me that this is going to be probably the only surgery, because as soon as he finds whatever is blocking the way, he's going to basically unblock the way and clean all the shed, literal shed in this case, that is blocking her intestines. So after he opens her and he begins cleaning her, he was able to drain most of the feces from her mouth and from her rectum, but and looking for whatever is blocking the intestines, he told me that he found a tumor of the size of an orange in a, I don't remember the scientific, the technical name, but it's basically on the corner of the left side of the torso, up on the big intestine. I don't recall the name on, in English right now. We have two intestines, the thin one and the bigger one. It's basically on the bigger one. On the left side, on one of the corners, on the corner of the left side. I don't recall the name in English right now, but anyway. So he found a tumor that was strangling the big intestine and blocking the way to the rectum. So basically, close to the rectum, and that's where the tumor was found. At the time, we didn't know what kind of tumor it was. 12 days later, around 12 to 14 days later, we got the result from pathology, and it was a malign cancerous tumor with metastasis. But at the time, we didn't know what kind of tumor it was. So days later, after the first surgery, the doctor told us that we were going to be needing to go to a second surgery. And this surgery was the one that was going to remove the tumor. And he removed around 30 centimeters of intestine, 15 centimeters on the left of the tumor and 15 centimeters on the right of the tumor. And that was supposed to be the end of it. He also removed during the second surgery, he was able to remove a part of the lymphatic system, which at the time I didn't know it existed really. Basically, what he told me is that the lymphatic system around the intestine is supposed to grow bigger, or when there was an infection on the system, on another organ. So basically, the lymphatic system helps to alleviate the inflammation of other organs. Instead of that, the lymphatic system inflammates themselves. That was basically it. So he removed something called ganglios in Spanish. I don't know what the name for that would be right now in English, but so he removed 8 of those ganglios, and from those 3 were contaminated with the tumor. So at the time, the doctor really didn't explain to me what that meant, but it came very clear after we got the pathology results. And my wife was a victim of a malign colon cancer, a malign tumor, basically. And if she was to recover, she may need to recover through a long process of basically maybe radiotherapy and chemotherapy, hormones. And she would require very expensive medicine just to stay alive, and a lot of luck. So at this time, when I get this news, my savings are running dry, and I grow desperate, because at this time, I haven't left her side. I was trying to, during this, this is the overwhelming phase for me, and for my wife especially, because she is the one suffering the disease. But at this time, I'm taking most of the decisions and I felt very comfortable spending the money for the surgeries because I was getting money from my savings, from my life savings. But the truth is that the money was running short, and this seems to be a battle that was to be won in a long time. So it was not going to be a sprint. It was supposed to be a marathon, and I was almost spent money-wise. So in my ignorance, I never learned how to use my medical insurance. Because I believe I got one, but since I didn't bring my laptop to the hospital up until later, I wasn't able to basically research anything. I was able to get my laptop later, but this is where the overwhelming part comes into play. I try to get into meetings in Teams. I try to get back to work during this hospitalization phase. But it was obvious to me that I was not going to be able to do that because the distraction work was pretty much a distraction, and the main objective would be to take care of my wife, cleaning her, helping her overcome this. And I was cleaning diapers. I was cleaning her basically. And I was not focusing on the job, basically. So my performance during I got into a new job starting February 1st, 2022. I begin actually working on February 2, and the day after the first surgery. So at the time, I was feeling very confident that this it was not going to stop us. I not even go to social media to post about it. Big mistake, because I was thinking, well, my wife and I, coming after the first surgery, probably we are going to be laughing about this in a week. So maybe I don't know what I was thinking. Basically, a part of me was not actually believing that this was something serious. Something that I could just pay off with money and forget about it a week later, and me and my wife will be together doing what we do, basically staying together or whatever. That didn't happen. So I deleted the post the day after when the day after the surgery, I believe, when I was coming into terms that this was not going to be just one surgery, basically. The thing is, I made a mistake. I should not have tried to either go back to work during this phase, or I should have taken the time. I should not have tried to work during this phase. I should not posted about it on social media because I didn't know. My ignorance, my arrogance, whatever. And yeah, that was really stupid. And that decision is going to haunt me to the day I die. But anyway, the thing is, after the second surgery, I am still dealing with work, but my performance is very poor because obviously I was not paying attention to work. I was trying to solve a crisis after another because, in order for the second surgery to happen, and the first one, for the first surgery, I needed to find units of plasma in order to facilitate the surgery for the doctors. Here in Mexico, you request blood, you don't buy it, you request blood to a blood bank. And the blood bank receives the request, and they process it and gave you the units in the case they have them. If they don't have them, well, that's an issue to solve. The first surgery, we only asked for 2 units of plasma For the second surgery, the doctor asked for 4. So for both of this, I was finding this unit of plasma very difficult at the time. I was able to get them, and the second surgery happened, but it came to me that getting these units it was very difficult for a private hospital. That is, I understand that in Mexico a government hospital doesn't get this process is not hard or not as hard as if you are asking from a private hospital. But anyway, bureaucracy, anyway, in the end. And I was dealing with issues with what to do. The doctor's recommendation became pretty much missions for me. So if I needed to find blood, if I needed to find we switched hospitals for the surgeries, because she was originally on one hospital. So in order to save cost, because two surgeries imply that she's going to be spending more time in the hospital. And the first hospital that she was very expensive. It was really good, but this was very expensive, staying per night. So the costs were piling up very quickly. So we moved there. We moved my wife to another hospital, and she receives her first two surgeries. The doctor on the second surgery removes the tumor, and on the first surgery she was on the first surgery we got the first tissue for pathology, basically, and we get the pathology results a Friday in the afternoon, and my wife was still in the hospital, and we received the results of pathology, and that was when we realized that she got colon cancer, basically. And from now on, the doctors are looking me funny, because I am the husband. I am going around looking for an answer how to solve this problem, and the nurses are looking at me funny, you know, they're watching somebody that and they are talking me about how to get over stuff, like implying that she's going to die no matter what I do. However, I did not give up, even in the end. I never gave up. I still got the hopes, even at the day she died, that she was going to get over this. And, well, she didn't. But anyway, the thing is, at that time, the doctor came to me one afternoon. After the second surgery, the doctor sends her back home. And since we were separated at the time, so I decided to take her at my home where I live with my parents. But she decided after that she may like to stay with her parent, with her mother. So she decided that, and she moved to her mother's house. She stayed there like 3 days. And one Saturday, I went to see her. And she was very deteriorated. She's very thin. And it's obvious that she's not well. So I called the doctor. I sent him some pictures. And he decides to come over the next day, the Sunday. He comes over, he examines her, and he basically pulls me aside and tells me that she really needs to go back to the hospital right now. So that's what we do, and he reminded me that she has a very aggressive cancer. He even graded, that was, since that's not his area of expertise, that would be an oncologist area, so he didn't really gave a professional opinion on that area. But he told me that she needs to go back to the hospital, and in order to save her life that was rapidly going away, we will need to a third surgery, basically, to try to stop her deteriorating state, because she was dying pretty fast. And he didn't really know, nobody really know why. The hope was to, after the second surgery, that her body would regenerate enough to being able to feed again through the mouth. So, but that didn't happen. And they, the plan was to, after the second surgery, to lift her up enough so she can actually visit an oncologist and basically keep or choose the next step at the oncologist. Maybe chemotherapy, radiotherapy, hormones, whatever. That didn't happen. So a third surgery was needed for her to live enough to get to see an oncologist. So I was pretty much drained down to my last savings. So when he told me that they were going to need another surgery, I was pretty much next to bankrupt. So I panicked, and he told me that he will need around 20 units of plasma and white cells in order to have a hope that she may survive the third surgery, and it's not a guarantee. And that's where I basically panicked, because it was very difficult to find 6, let alone 20. So that's where I panicked. My mother was there, and she told me that I was hyperventilating, and I basically got a panic attack. I didn't know what to do or how to react or what to say. And thankfully, my mother, in her great wisdom, she took my arm and basically told me to calm down, and I did. I didn't realize at the time that I was hyperventilating, and I basically panicked at the moment. Thankfully, I was able to talk to my wife, and she got, at the time, what I believe were her savings, her personal savings. So he got money, and I assumed that that money was from hers. I was wrong. It turns out that the money that she got was from a communal savings account, an investment account, that she, her mother, and two of her brothers got together to save money and invest on an investment account. So she basically picked up her quote unquote her money, and she got that, and I was able to pay the hospital bill for the day and the surgery expenses, and more importantly, the deposit that the hospital asks for 20 units of blood, which was the most expensive expense, including the surgery. It was way too expensive to pay the deposit for the blood, because you don't buy blood, you gave a deposit, and you can recover the deposit after you basically gave back two donors for every single unit of blood that you get. So that was the deal with the blood bank anyway. So it's a process basically. And that the deposit was a lot of money. And I pay all of that with what I believe at the time was my wife's money. My wife's deteriorating health was making very difficult for her to take decisions regarding complex issues like money and applications, and because she gave me her phone, she gave me her card, and I was able to pay the medical bills for that. My mother-in-law came by, and she was alarmed by the rate of that, by the amount of money that I was spending. I didn't understand at the time why. I believe that she was concerned with how much money is going to be left, but there was plenty money. There was a lot of money on that account, a lot. And I talking millions. They were not poor. But I didn't know. I didn't know that the money wasn't entirely hers. From my wife, I mean. So that was the time that I learned that my mother-in-law considered that money that I spent, she considered it her money. Her own money. And she was more concerned with her money than her own daughter, sadly. Her brother too. And he was the one that basically stopped me on my tracks and told me to give them that to give account of all the expenses that I've been covering with that money. And I was not able to stay with my wife because I was making sure that I was basically looking for all the receipts, and I got to go together with an accountant to get my bills in order. Basically, it became an obstacle to even see my wife to get this done. But as any other crisis, I just pushed forward and I got my accounts in order. My expenses, my accountant allowed me to have a list of expenses and all the receipts. I got the copies and I got everything ready. I was not able to be with my wife for an entire day because of that. And I regret doing that at this time, but anyway. And this money thing became a big issue. Yeah, that was not the last day that I was going to deal with this. Moving forward, I was not able to find the units of blood required for my wife to survive the surgery. So, hours before the surgery, like by a miracle, I was able to find the units missing, and we were hours of losing her life that day. So I did find the missing units, and before the third surgery, the doctor was very clear that there is a big possibility that she may not survive the surgery. So whatever I may like to say to her or to do or to say to her, or if I wanted to be with her, now is the time. And that's where I understand that her life was about to end in a big possibility that day. So my parents came by, her family came by, we all hold her hand, we all pretty much spent our last time with her, basically hoping that this will not be the last time that she will be alive. She was looking around and she got a little mad because she got mad because she didn't first because we never told her, even at her deathbed, we never told her that she got colon cancer, because the doctor basically told us that even though she got the right to know, knowing it at this time will not help her, even that will be in her detriment, because the depression that she will receive from the news will be in detriment for her health. So if she survived the tear surgery, we will tell her in the appropriate time when she recovers and gets strong enough to see an oncologist, that will be the time to tell her. So she didn't know she got cancer even the day she died, sadly. So I basically held her hand, told to her. We were watching MTV. I was there with her. And so the time for the surgery came, and we were just waiting, me and my mother and my mother-in-law. We were waiting for the surgery to end. And those had to be the longest hours in my life. So basically, after like 3 or 4 hours, the doctor called us, and the doctor tell us that the surgery was a success, that she survived, and that she may need ICU, that's in English, I believe it's intensive care unit, for a day. And in the private hospital, a single day of ICU is very expensive. So expensive that you can buy a used car for every single day that she stays there. So she is going to need to spend the night and part of the next day there, basically. So that's another bit hit on the money. And I got my mother-in-law on me all the time regarding the money. So I was spending an entire hour just to pay that, because she was looking at me like a hawk and making questions and asking questions to receptionists and asking if that money is needed really, and etc. So it was a pain to pay. And it became one of the doctors or the helpers for the doctors told me in the hallway that she may need to spend another day there. And I didn't got money anymore. If that happened, another ICU day, I was not going to be able to pay for that, which means that probably I was not going to be able to take my wife out of that hospital. So I was panicking again. And I was running around and I was trying to find an explanation, because some doctor in the hallway told me that my wife is going to stay there a second day, which means paying another ICU day. And my mother-in-law was not going to allow me to do that, because I no longer had any more money. And after I discussed the matter with my mother-in-law, and we got into a big fight, and she basically reprimanded me for spending so much money. Even though I explained to her that all that money was for her daughter, she didn't listen to me, and her brother got involved. I mean, my wife's brother got involved. In the end, they took from me the phone, my wife's phone, and her card for the account, and I no longer got access to the money on the investment account. That was plenty, by the way. So I grew desperate, and I plead for my wife's life, basically. And I was able to negotiate that instead of paying an entire ICU day, I will just pay for the oxygen that was required, because the in exchange for her to not stay another day, she will just stay hours on the morning. So I was just going to pay oxygen, and I was able to pay for that. Thankfully, I got enough money for that. But it was clear to me that she needed hospitalization after that. So I arranged, with the help of my father, to move her and the help of my aunt that was working as a nurse at the time on a public hospital, on a government hospital. So we were able to get her into a government hospital, basically for free, because it's a governmental hospital. And we were able to move her with an ambulance there the next day after the surgery. And the doctor told us that she needed a four intervention, not a surgery really, but a four intervention to get her a catheter to basically feed her through her vein directly into the heart and try to feed her that way. And with the hopes that she will actually recover, and the plan was to basically allow her body to recover and regenerate her intestines and her stomach, and basically the moment that she was able to feed herself from the mouth again and defecate properly, then we will be able to go see an oncologist and basically begin the war against cancer. But that never happened. The oncologist, she arrives in emergency, and basically in the hospital. She's moved into ICU for the night. After that, since it's a public hospital, it's very unorganized and oversaturated, and basically I began a nightmare with paperwork. Basically, I need to get documents for her, and her documentation was not on my home, was in her home, and her family was very uncooperative to get those. Thankfully, I was behind them, and I was able to get the documentation for her. And I realized that she didn't really live with me. She was living with her mom. Yeah. Anyway. After that, I bring the documentation and register my wife there. And thankfully, she's moved into a hospital bed. And on the bed number 312, where she spent the last days of her life, basically. So the next day, when she is there, I talk with my mother-in-law, and basically I bring the receipts and the money that was left after all of that, in hopes to get on her good side and work together for my wife, you know. And she got really mad at me because she was hoping to get all the money back, or most of the money, when I basically gave her around $1,000. She grew very mad at me. She cursed at me, and she got really mad. She told me that I was nothing to her daughter because I didn't share blood with her. She got really mad at me. She said very awful things. But I didn't care because I was more concerned with my wife's health anyway. And anyway, so she didn't get the money at the time because she wanted her son, my wife's brother, to be with her to see the issue of the money. So I get together with them again that same day and the night, and we basically see the accounts, see the receipts, and reluctantly they basically sign off that they received the money from me. And I show them the receipts and where every single all the money was spent, basically. And the mother is not happy, and they reluctantly sign, and I gave them the $1,000 that was lying around, and they were not happy. So the day after, when I tried to visit my wife, and because of coronavirus, after the coronavirus hit, hospital access has been limited to 2 people in my case. So when I came to visit in the morning, I call up, and my brother-in-law told me that her mother, my mother-in-law, decided that I was not welcome anymore, and that I was not going to visit her anymore, because they need to get out. One of them needs to get out for me to get in. And I came to visit the day after too, and a cousin of hers was there alongside her brother. So basically there were 2 people all the time, just to make sure that I don't just walk in, I guess. And I was not welcome anymore. So I was able to basically infiltrate through emergencies in order to see my wife during the early mornings. And I spent the night, a couple of nights there, and a third night and a fourth night and so forth. I saw my brother-in-law there, so he wasn't able to do anything. He was mad, but he wasn't able to do anything. So I stayed with my wife. I told her that I love her, that I was going to be there for her, that I was going to fight for her. I care for her, and I was with her the entire time. But one morning, this past Monday, 28, February 28, 2022, I didn't go to see her the Sunday. So I skipped a day, Sunday, because I was very tired of not sleeping and working the next day. Really bad decision, by the way. And due to exhaustion, I slept Sunday. I didn't went to see her. And I was planning to see her that fateful Monday during the night. But that didn't happen. Around 1 p.m., my father barged into my home office and he told me that my wife has passed away. And I didn't believe it at the time, but for a second I believed this was some kind of cruel joke, but he was very serious. And I felt my soul leaving my body for a second there. And I didn't know what to respond or what to say. And that's where I realized that that the fight for my wife was over. And that she just died in pain because the time that I spent with her was painful to her because she was dying. And every single day that passes by, I see her weak body becoming even weaker. And it was painful to see and watch. Well, the thing is, the day she passed away, my mother called my mother-in-law and tell her that we may take the funerary expenses if able. But I believe she didn't want that. I decided that would be better for all of us, because my political family, as we say here, my mother-in-law, my brothers-in-law, the only thing that kept us together was my wife. And now that she's gone, I decided to step aside, to accept that they never want me there. And I didn't went to her funeral. I held at my father's house a ceremony in her name the day she died, and the day after when she was when she went to the cemetery and got buried, the funeral itself was held in an unknown place to me at the time. So my family came to my father's house, and we all pray for her, and basically we basically pray for her. And that was it, basically. And the burial day, I just kept working. But I was very distracted at the time. And I was reflecting a little bit on the decisions that I could have taken. But the truth is that they didn't really matter because my wife is dead. So, and I'm dealing with all of that. But funny enough, I don't really care how this affects me. I feel frustrated because maybe I could have taken decisions differently. I may like to think that if I had done something years ago, or realized what she got years ago, maybe I could have done something different, but that's just wishful thinking, not, and I am a very pragmatic man. So anyway, regret, I think, is called. Not for the things I did, but for the things I didn't do. For example, my biggest regret would be that we never get the chance to have a son or a daughter. I didn't know at the time, but She got a surgery years ago, and she got removed an ovary, the right ovary. I realized that after looking for her medical records in order to get her into the hospital. So I found ultrasound analysis, and I discovered that she got, from 2010, she got something called colitis in Spanish, which is basically a pain in the rectum, a disease on the rectum, not fatal, but very uncomfortable. And she's been having that since 2010, in indications of colitis, but she didn't got colitis at all. And now in retrospect, I believe that was the colon cancer growing. So I met my wife at the job in 2014, I believe. 2014, we began dating at 2016, at the end of 2016, and we got married 2 years after in 2018. So, yeah. But anyway, and this is going to be the bonus episode for Learn to Code podcast. Now you know, funny enough, because the previous episode to all of this was me talking about my big plans for this 2022, that I was planning to focus on Oracle full time and nothing else, and become a master on Oracle to keep working on Oracle. That didn't happen because I got laid off from that job. That I was going to do so many things. Yeah. I didn't do the podcast too often because I was enjoying my time with my wife. Although this past year, we grew apart. She went to live with her mother, and she basically visited me from time to time. But anyway, I didn't want to see it as that. Maybe she, I don't know. It doesn't really matter now that I think about it. Well, almost an hour. I've been talking for around 58 minutes. I'm going to remove these spaces maybe? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't even know if I'm going to publish this episode. But anyway. And just to finish, I may like to say that I've been feeling a deep sadness that doesn't go away. Even if I cry, even if I am calm, I feel that sadness that doesn't go away. It's just there. And I find difficult to ignore it. And her presence is not anymore here. Although I have pictures and some videos of her. And her clothes are here, some of her clothes, and some of her stuff is still lying around here, pictures. So in a sense, I feel like she never left. But I do know that she is not anymore on this world, so she's gone. Well, I may like to leave this in a higher note, but I can't, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you for listening. You are indeed are, and see you later.